Blog Talk Radio.
Well, good afternoon, everyone, and thank you for joining us today on Gold Radio Cafe. It's Friday, October 26, 2012, and welcome to the Gold and Silver Financial Review. My name is Bosco Kucharowicz, and this program is brought to you by Central Metals. We understand the problem, and we have the answer: gold and silver-related investments. We're located here in Windsor, Ontario, Canada, and our website is centralmetalscorp.com, and our email address is mail@centralmetalscorp.com. We've had quite a bit of news this week, especially in Canada. We had the governor of the central bank came out and made some comments. I'd like to introduce our co-host here, Jeff Dunphy. Welcome to the program.
Good afternoon, Bosco. How are you doing?
Good. We got a couple of questions from a listener, and they're very good questions here. Jeff, you want to address I'll just read the question on air here. How can HSBC hold the largest ETF in gold, the GLD, and at the same time have the largest short position in physical gold in the world? Are the investors in GLD essentially getting screwed? Also, will we ever see a price of physical gold bullion going one way and the price of the gold ETF going the opposite way, a decoupling? Jeff, what do you think?
Okay, first off, I'd like to thank Vinny. Vinny, you have sent this and a couple of other questions in that have been very astute, and let's give you a bit of a perspective on what we think. Granted, because we aren't completely on the inside, our skepticism might be tempered by the fact that we're giving these guys more credit than they're due, perhaps, or maybe they are more nefarious than we think. Let's chat a little about HSBC and the various gold banks playing with the gold markets. Now, recently, as Bosco and I were caucusing on some time ago, Jim Sinclair came out and chatted about how the gold banks, those who own gold, manipulate the market. So I want to chat a little about the second part of your question in a moment. But the first part is, when you are trading paper gold and when you own physical gold, as long as your interests are aligned, your paper trading and your physical trading should be reflective of things. Now, one of the things that happens when the gold banks start to manipulate the market is that they create positions in the marketplace to facilitate their trading practices. One of the things we've seen over the years is that the banks have made enormous amounts of money trading. And we see this this French court ruled that Cavill or whoever lost $5 billion for Société Générale has to pay it all back. Bosco, do you have $5 billion in your pocket or 5 billion euros in your pocket that you can pay back? That'll be a bit tough.
Yeah.
So the banks, as also has come out by a Goldman Sachs employee, the banks no longer view their clientele as allies or as people whom they work for. They now view their clientele, in this Goldman Sachs guy's words, as muppets to take advantage of. So Vinny makes a great point in saying, how can HSBC hold the largest ETF in gold and at the same time have the largest short position? Well, it is, Vinny, because HSBC no longer holds their clients' best interests in front of their own. They are happy to use their clients as, in Goldman Sachs parlance, muppets. So, yes, I suspect that investors in these ETFs are at cross-purposes with the end game for HSBC. Now, on to the second part of the question. Will we ever see a price of the physical gold bullion going one way and the price of gold ETFs go in the opposite? So, as I said before, if in fact they are aligned and the ETFs are actually backstopped by physical gold, probably not. Our thinking, as Bosco and I have been chatting about for some months now, is that there will be an expose at some point in time. Somebody's going to say, whoa, I don't think there's enough gold here to cover these. And as soon as that happens, as soon as the emperor has no clothes presents itself, you may very well see an uncoupling of paper from gold. We are starting to see the currencies disappear because, or the currencies collapse, because there is a delusion by the layman that paper currencies are backstopped by gold. Sometimes you can actually tell people, are currencies backed by gold? And some will actually come out and say, yes, they are. The more people get to that point of understanding that this is a fraud, the more likely there is to be a decoupling. So that answers that question. Now, Bosco, do you want me to read one of his other questions?
Yeah, sure. I'd just like to add to that. Let Vinny know in our listeners, you know, I just want to make sure, you know, everybody should read the prospectus if they're investing in the GLD or any kind of paper gold derivatives. Be sure to read the prospectus carefully and see where the liability lies and what exactly, because a lot of these paper traded gold products are, what they do is basically they say it's backed by gold, but it's not backed by gold one for one or dollar for dollar. What they do is they go into the futures market and they buy a futures contract or an option on a futures contract, and they basically put up a small percentage up for deposit to control whatever amount of gold. Like the standard gold contract in the futures market is 100 ounces, so you typically would put up, let's say, 5% cash to control that contract. So, you know, and if the contract goes against you, so there's possibly a leverage play in there, and whether or not HSBC and other banks or institutions that are selling paper gold products, you have to be careful. How are they actually purchasing? How are they getting that exposure of one-to-one, if that's what they're getting? So you have to read the prospectus and make sure that you understand exactly what the bank is doing with your money. And I think this addresses some of the concerns that I've posted on my website recently about trading and high-frequency trading and so on. It's become a market of, you know, just people trading on the internet, and it lends itself to that casino mentality where people are just trading products and they don't even know what they are and what assets or what fundamentals are behind those products. So I just like to, you know, urge our listeners, make sure you understand exactly what you're investing in and where you're putting your money and understand the risks involved in doing that. So that's all I just wanted to say about that, Jeff.
Great point, Bosco. Great point. It's the old adage of buyer beware. And,
exactly.
We in Canada have a little less cultural discrepancy between what you see is what you get versus what happens in the States. The Americans are very regulated in terms of what they have to disclose, but oftentimes what they hide in the small print can come back and bite you in the rump, as it were. Right, Bosco?
Yep.
Okay, so,
next question.
Okay, so now let's chat about Vinny has, again, Vinny, thank you very much for these. Federal Reserve Private Bank, Bank of England Private Bank, Deutsche Bank, Dexia, Anglo-Irish, Credit Suisse, Swiss National Bank. What about the Bank of Canada? What is it? Is this bank public or another Rothschild bank? Okay, so this is a great question. Right, and he also follows it up. Do you know if the Bank of Canada is engaged in the same ridiculous stimulus programs as the Fed, ECB, and Bank of Japan? So now there's two parts of this question. Okay, the popular propaganda, if you will, or the information that comes from the government of Canada is the Queen of England is probably the owner, if you will. All of the shares are held by the Government of Canada. The shares of the bank are held by the minister on behalf of the Queen. Okay? So I think it's fair to say, Bosco, and we've chatted about this, but I think the Bank of England probably exhibits some leverage, if you will, or moral suasion over the Bank of Canada. But I do think that the Bank of Canada is probably owned directly or indirectly via the Bank of England by the Queen. However, it is, you know, it, the propaganda on the website of how they present it is that it's owned on behalf of the Queen. Now, the next part of the question is the Bank of Canada engaged in ridiculous stimulus? And I would make reference to how the Bank of Canada and the Canadian government, because we were such a relatively small fish in the barrel when things collapsed in 08 and also previously, but when things collapsed in 08, everybody was worried about bailing out the American banks. And so consequently, as a result, the American banks got all the press and got all the headlines. Now, that isn't to say that the Canadian banks were not enormously exposed, but just less so. Okay? So now, that being said, there is an article in Digital Journal, and it's dated the beginning of May of this year. So it's a few months ago. But the Canadian Centre for Policy Alternatives claims that the Canadian biggest banks received support from various government agencies that reached $114 billion at its peak. Okay, and then another newspaper came out and said, oh, this is all just leftist propaganda. However, it is something that you can go and look on the web and find in some certain instances. So the pragmatist in both Bosco and I would suggest that it's unlikely that the Bank of Canada would not have been affected, certainly by its derivatives and definitely by its lending policies and practices, but we just don't have the leverage that the American banks have. So consequently, our exposure wouldn't be as bad. However, this article goes on to say that they had $114 billion at its peak. Okay, so I mean, yes, references to CIBC, BMO, and Scotiabank being well underwater. So yes, that is being done, and that brings us back to what Bosco mentioned at the beginning of the program was Mark Carney making news about saying, well, we might very well raise interest rates. Let's be really clear. The threat of raising interest rates is all he wanted to tender here. There's no way he will raise interest rates because many economies in the country, because the country of Canada is very many economies, if you will, are barely standing up. So to raise interest rates would be crippling. He threatens that merely to false flag that the economy's okay and that they might have to cool it down. So that is a bit of an erroneous declaration. They cannot raise interest rates merely because, as a previous guest said, as soon as they start raising interest rates, bond prices collapse, and bond prices, we think, are in a bubble. Okay, but again, Vinny, very insightful questions. Very insightful questions.
Yeah, thank you, Vinny. Just like to... You know, I'm not really sure. I've had a number of different sources discuss the Bank of Canada and who really owns them. I don't know if that information is on their website or not, but I think I can't say for sure, but I don't imagine that they're solely owned by the government of Canada, that there's private interests involved somewhere. I don't know. I guess somebody would have to, do their own due diligence and go research that. If maybe the Queen of England is involved in that, I would not be surprised at all. Regarding Mark Carney and his comments a few days ago, I was in Toronto for a couple of days. I just got back last night, and I did catch part of his speech there, and I haven't read anywhere in the news about that he let the cat out of the bag. And what I'm referring to is that in his during the questioning period, where is it here? Mark Carney stated, and I quote, "Canadian banks are moving to Basel III 2019 definitions of capital at the start of next year. What that means, folks, is that Canadian banks will be required to follow the Basel III Accords as whatever definition of capital. And I have printed out a copy of that, going through it today. But I know that in there, somewhere, it states that classification of a 0% risk-free asset, number one, is cash. Number two is gold bullion. So basically what I think is going to happen next year, Canadian banks will have to accept gold bullion as a risk-free capital asset. The Federal Reserve, or the FDIC in the United States has moved in that direction already this year, and they've publicly stated that they will, that gold bullion is a 0% risk-free asset. So it's just as good as cash, just as good as U.S. Treasuries, and so on. So I think that's a huge statement, a big development. All Canadian banks next year are going to have to include gold in their reserve assets. And I believe that that's going to force them to purchase more physical gold bullion, because apparently they have to raise their Tier 1 capital ratio from 4% to 6% over, I believe, until 2015. So gold bullion is going to be included in that capital ratio. So I think it's another sign that, that gold is slowly entering into
official
monetary policy. And
becoming mainstream, yeah, exactly.
Yeah. I mean, we discussed that, I think, last week. We discussed that, I believe it was on your blog that you contribute to, that gold is becoming mainstream. So
yeah,
it's just more evidence, people. You have to get your gold bullion, and as we discussed, I urge people, get the physical. Don't trade it. It's your insurance policy. It's your reserve. Make sure that you own the physical. Either take it home with you or have it privately stored in a vault outside the banking system. The paper trading gold, again, gold mining companies are fine as long as you do your due diligence and you understand what it means to invest in stocks, and you do the research and you have a good broker. I don't think there's nothing wrong with owning gold mining companies and so on, but I think everybody should have a portion of their portfolio dedicated to physical gold bullion. And it's just, you're following the same pace that the central banks are going. Now, you know, if the Central Bank of Canada is going to be going in that direction, what's the harm in you going in that direction too? You're just following their lead. So this is one of the statements that I haven't seen anybody in the media mention that. I didn't know that the Canadian banks were moving in that direction next year. So, folks, there it is. Gold is more and more becoming a mainstream asset.
Not a bad thing on one hand, Bosco, and certainly one of the things that was written in Thundering Herd in that blog,
yeah,
about how it does become mainstream, and there may be some interest of conventional money managers pushing that forward. I am and will continue to express high skepticism about having bankers in Switzerland define how the banks of the world organize themselves.
Mm-hmm.
How they couch it is that we will all have the same organization and the same unity or solidarity, if you will.
Right.
And I think that is incredibly dangerous, because then we may run into realms of, well, why don't we just have one currency? And that just gets to be a little big brother to me, Bosco.
Yeah, no, I agree. I think that's the, like, I mean, looking at the big picture, that's the direction that they're going in. I think all these, I believe that they're putting policies in place little by little, eventually to have a one world currency. And I've said it before on this show, I think that that's their attempt, and that's why you have all these central banks following this Basel III Accord. And be careful. Again, in that Basel III Accord, it discusses the risk and the asset allocation of banks. And when they're talking about physical gold as opposed to derivative traded gold, there's a big difference. So if you have gold with a bank, or like we discussed earlier, ETF or and so on, that might not be exactly what you own, and these changes might affect what you're invested in. So be careful, folks. If you have paper gold out there, you know, make sure you clearly understand. I mean, for me, it's a simple thing. If I'm going to buy gold, I want to see it. You know, I want to see it and I want to test it. You know, it's, you know, that's just the way it is. I mean, you invest in something, I want to see what I'm investing in. You know, but unfortunately, people have been accustomed to just, you know, putting their money out in the market, and it sits in cyberspace somewhere in some account from a bank, and or in some mutual fund that they don't know anything about. Or, you know, it's just now I think the confidence and the stability of markets, it should be forcing people to take these steps towards, you know, eliminating the counterparty risk between you and your assets. Before, sure, we could trust the banks and so on, but right now, with what's happening around the world and fraud prevalent, you know, in many financial institutions, you know, you're taking a big risk by putting your money out in the market.
Now, Bosco, I want to chat a little about one of our favorite, next to Bob Chapman, who has recently just left, but one of our favorite individuals who has historically been a gold trader is Jim Sinclair, and his message has been quite loudly, to which we certainly embrace, and that is they're going to do quantitative easing to infinity. Mm-hmm. But he recently came out and sort of gave a bit of an expose on how the bullion banks, which is part of the Vinny genre of questioning, but how the bullion banks work. And I wanted to see if I might be able to explain it in a manner that makes people understand how the gold market, and silver market for that example, but I'm going to use this for gold, how it gets manipulated. Okay, so let me see if we can. We'll play a scenario and we'll step it out so people can understand it. Okay, so the bullion banks, a bank, many of them together perhaps, but they open up both large and short, large quantities of both shorts and longs. So let's say they have 50,000 futures contracts, both short and long. So that's $9 billion short, $9 billion long, with gold at $1,800. So at this neutral point, they're neutral, right? So they have no impact at all on where the market's going, and they don't care which way it goes because they are hedged. That's called a perfect hedge. You're both long and short at the same time, which means you don't make money on the way up or on the way down in that place, okay? So if they want the market to go down, as Jim says, as Jim Sinclair says, they simply pull the long side of the hedge. That is, they start selling their long positions relentlessly and letting people know that they're selling their long positions. The market goes, uh-oh, things are going down. Let's say they go down to 1750. So they now have very nice profits on their still fully intact short position, right? And the algorithms of the hedge funds, these wizards, these financial wizards and architects, see that the market is falling, and they join the selling, watching. This is the trading that Bosco was just talking about. They just get in and trade. Now, the algorithms and these hedge funds and these guys that just want to make money on movement, they use these, and they see that the market is falling, and they join the selling, driving prices down further to, let's say, 1650. Okay, so the bullion bank now has giant profits on their still intact, enormous short positions, right? Now the market has momentum to the downside as the trendsetters and the trend traders, these algorithms, are selling longs and adding to their shorts because they're following the trend. Right? At this point, the bullion bank starts buying longs up quietly. I mean, not fast enough to stop the market from falling, but they're buying longs from people who are late in getting to the party. So they're following the trend. Did you hear it's going short? Did you hear it's going short? And they're they're shorting gold, thinking it's going to fall a long way. This is how market manipulation goes. And Jim Sinclair, I suspect, Bosco, is going to be putting himself at risk to this. Okay, so the bullion bank keeps buying these, and once again, they equal the number of long futures contracts. Once again, that equals the shorts. So now they're neutral in that. Okay, they just made massive profits on their still intact short position as gold literally dropped from 1,800 to our example, let's say 1,550, right? Or 1650. So now they wait till the market stabilizes, and then, go figure, they pull the short side of the hedge and start relentlessly buying back their short positions, keeping all of their longs. So effectively, Bosco, they're profiting on the way down and profiting on the way up and manipulating the market by making the trendsetters and making the hedge funds dive in. Soon they have good profits on their longs, and the hedge funds and trendsetters join the upside party, buying into the rally, and thus the decades, and they've been doing this for decades and decades and decades. Now, in the very same breath, that's how they make money trading, and that's how these banks are profiting by their, because the number of banks to do this gets smaller and smaller and smaller, because the banks have nearly had trillions of dollars given to them, and the banks have had to consolidate. So you now have these banks going, the only way to make money right now and to show profitability is to trade our way into profitability. So again, it furthers the whole process of manipulation in the market. And they bring it up and they bring it down. And I think that's a modestly clear, I hope that's a clear explanation of how they play the market on the way up and on the way down.
Yeah, it's more or less pretty much how it works. People need to understand that, you know, there are ways that these bullion banks and traders, profit in both directions. And, Jim is one of the few people that is still around that traded these markets in the 70s and early 80s that has that vast experience. So, I follow his website practically every day. So if anyone's not familiar with Jim Sinclair, just go to his website, jsmindset.com, and it's a great educational experience. And there's a lot of information and articles there you can read to understand the gold market. I don't know if you received the other question. I got Vinny sent in another question this morning.
I do have it. Yeah.
Regarding the Germany's, there's a lot of news now about the Bundesbank in Germany, how they want to repatriate their gold reserves from the Federal Reserve and other central banks. And one of the articles that relates to this, I'm just going to read the, we don't have much time yet, another 5 minutes or so, but the Bundesbank, of course, quite right in its opinion of the value of the examinations. In reality, it does not matter one bit whether the Federal Reserve Bank of New York actually has the German central bank's gold or whether the gold is pure. As long as the Fed says it's there, it is as good as there for all practical purposes to which it might be put. It can be sold, leased out, used as collateral, employed to extinguish liabilities, and counted as bank capital, just the same whether it exists or not. And this is an article from CNBC, and I would just like to address this comment is that of course it matters if the gold is there or not, and whether or not they used it, because if it's not, then that's fraud. That's complete 100% fraud. Okay, so of course it matters, and of course it matters what kind of gold is there, because there are certain standards that you want to go by. And if you deposit your gold somewhere and that institution lended it out or sold it to somebody else and they didn't adjust their books, then that's complete fraud. So, I mean, for someone to post this to say that it doesn't really matter, just a bookkeeping entry, I mean, this is ridiculous. And I think this is why Germany is wants to go verify that their gold is there. And I don't even, I mean, this goes back to, I think, the Bretton Woods Agreement and so on, back after World War II. But I don't know why these countries even store their gold in foreign central banks. Why? They should just store it in their own country. So I think this is going to be a trend. Now I think the president of Venezuela, what was his name? He did it, was it this year or last year, that he called in all his gold? Chavez. He called in all of his gold from England, and they had to ship him his gold. Now Germany's calling in their gold. So are they setting a trend now that all these banks are going to, or countries are going to call in their gold from the Federal Reserve? Possibly. So if the Fed doesn't have the gold there, they're going to have to go out and buy it. And I don't think the central banks are going to accept anything different. Either that, or they're going to have to print the money and send them the cash. But this is the problem. You know, if the central bank defaults, or they have to print money to send to another, then that's inflationary. Then they're, again, creating money out of thin air. You know, it's just, I don't know, it's just a big mess. Jeff, what do you think?
Well, I mean, one of the things that happens, ladies and gentlemen, is that they get caught in their own greed. The greed sort of blows up in their face. So as we've said, so they have 100 bars of gold, and then they start writing pieces of paper that says, you can have part of 100 bars of gold. And then all of a sudden they go, well, maybe we should just sell more of this paper and pretend we have the gold. And then somebody shows up and says, can I see the gold? And they say, well, sure, come on down here. So, I mean, part of the game is they're going around, oh, no, they want to go see the gold. So what will they do? Well, their intention is not to get caught. So the intention on not getting caught is, okay, well, what are we going to show them, Bosco? We only have 100 bars of gold down there, and we've sold 200 pieces of paper saying we have 200. Yeah. Well, who's coming down? We'll just pretend the gold that we're going to show them is theirs.
Yeah,
so
it will get
sticky. It will get mucky. And consequently, they run the risk of getting caught. They're hoping, one of the things that happens in terms of egregious greed and unbelievably selfish greed is you start to think that you're so smart that you're not going to get caught, and you start to think you're way smarter than everybody else, right? The smartest guy in the room modality, which is what brought the Enron fiasco down. So these guys there will be a point in time where they have to show up for the gold.
Yep.
And one of the things that happened last winter, as Bosco knows, but I'll share it with you right now, is that I went and spent some time in a lab with a lovely, clever, nerdy metallurgist, if you will, who was talking about, he would go in and evaluate portfolios in Europe, Bosco, and people would come in and say, here, I have in my portfolio, I have 1,000 units of value, and I 10 of my units or 100 of my units are in gold and silver. Would you go in and verify that the gold is real? And so he'd come in and use his chemistry knowledge and his wizardry, if you will, and he'd go and evaluate whether these bars of gold were real. To which, you know, I said, so? And he said, well, before you do this, before these guys do this, they make me swear and sign CAs that I won't tell anybody that their gold is real or not real. And so I have to claim to that. But, and I said, but what? He said, but 10 to 12, maybe 13% of people's gold isn't real.
Mm-hmm.
Well, yeah, so man. All of a sudden, you know, that made me go, you've got to be kidding. That's unbelievable. Mm-hmm. So one of the things that I've seen firsthand is somebody, well, in fact, I'm two degrees away from it because he told me firsthand. But he was going in there and evaluating people's gold stores, and some of them aren't real. And so it does lend me to believe I'm a bit skeptical in thinking that when people say the gold is there, I kind of think it may not be. However, food for thought, it's certainly something that we should keep in mind when we are owning our physical gold and knowing where it is.
Yeah, no, and it's, again, you know, that addresses the question of fraud, and some people aren't concerned about it because, oh well, my paper product is moving in the same direction as gold, so it doesn't matter. Well, you know, maybe it doesn't matter now, but you know, with the introduction of physical gold into the market and the fact that these central banks around the world are basically calling the bluff, okay? And if you can't produce the physical gold, there's going to be major defaults around in the paper gold market. So with that, folks, we'd like to, you know, close out the program today and hope you all enjoy the weekend, and we look forward to seeing you next week. Jeff, have a good weekend.
Thanks, Bosco, and thanks for listening, ladies and gentlemen. See you next week.
Goodbye.